Hey, thank you for joining us this weekend on Nevada Backcountry. Man, we got some housekeeping to get to, some corrections. Thank you to our listeners on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. We got a message on Facebook, Dave?
Yeah, it was one of the Facebook or Instagram, one or the other, yeah.
I'll tell you what, because we could probably get rolling on the Gray Wolf housekeeping I've got here.
Yeah.
Let's dive into the reg. There's a little bit of confusion with the regs in the book, and someone pointed it out to us.
Yeah, so the 091 interstate tag.
Okay.
It's an elk tag. And in the regulations under page 9, it has that important things to know for 2024. And the very last bullet point on the far right third column states that the unit 091 is no longer an interstate hunt with Utah.
Okay.
Well, that only pertains to mountain lions.
Right.
So it was a misprint. I confirmed it this week. And then back on page 16, where the actual hunt is, 091 hunt, which is a new season date hunt, August 17th to September 7th, there's four tags, states that it is an interstate hunt with Utah, and that is when you're in Utah, you just got to follow Utah's rules and regulations for their hunt.
Okay.
So that is an interstate hunt. The elk hunt is an interstate hunt. It
not
is
mountain
it
lion.
Is not no longer a mountain lion. You know, Nevada can't go into Utah and hunt a mountain lion in 091 with a Nevada tag, and Utah can't come into Nevada and hunt mountain lion.
Right.
And
so if you're lucky enough to draw the elk tag, you're
correct.
Good to go.
Just follow the regs. Just follow the regs. If you're in Utah, make sure you know what their rules and regs are in relation to hunting.
So, no, before you go, more housekeeping stuff. So, another correction. Someone pointed my nose in this direction.
Yeah, I'm really curious on this.
I found an article when we did the wolf episode in Nevada.
Yeah.
We were talking about how they'll travel
hundreds of miles they can travel. Yeah.
Recently, a rancher in Elbert County, Colorado, legally trapped a gray wolf. Now, he wasn't targeting gray wolves. That's illegal in the state of Colorado.
Yeah.
He was a landowner. He was trapping coyotes on his property, fully legal, goes out to check his trap line. He's got an 84-pound male wolf in a trap. I don't know what type of trap it was, but here's where it gets real interesting because we've talked about it on the show. They are reintroducing gray wolves into Colorado introducing more, as some might say. This wolf did not come from those 10 wolves recently released in Colorado. When they did the DNA analysis on it, it is from the Great Lakes pack over 900 miles away from Elbert County, Colorado.
That's nuts.
And here's where it gets even weirder. They collared a wolf back in 2023. And over an 18-month period, or I guess the survey wrapped up in 2023, they collared it 18 months prior, that wolf traveled over 4,000 miles in 18 months.
Is that like 4,000 miles total, or is that like the furthest distance from where it was trapped to where it went?
No, total.
Total.
Like a loop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So the loop could have been a 300-mile loop. He just ran
right.
the loop. He just ran a circuit.
He was stuck, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 18 months, 4,000 miles, that's...
unreal.
That's pretty awesome.
I mean...
I guess you never know what these animals are actually going to do. I mean, science gives you so much information. You know, there's always those outliers, but that's wild.
Yeah, 4,000 miles.
4,000 miles.
Traveled in 18 months.
He's got to be swole.
That's a strong wolf.
Yeah, no doubt.
But correction to our wolf episode where we said they could travel hundreds of miles, they'll travel thousands.
Yeah, I guess they can. Yeah.
So that's housekeeping stuff. I just got an email from Andy McCormick over there at Legacy Sports International.
Okay.
He's been testing their new Super Lights, the 4.3-pound version. He sent me some pictures of his groups, and he's running it suppressed. You're talking about just teeny tiny little bug hole groups. Famously, Ron Spomer was also testing one of their rifles, the Super Light, with a suppressor, getting amazing groups out of that. We had Randy Newberg on the show.
Yeah.
He's almost exclusively hunts with one.
With suppressors, yeah.
So Let's back up for a second. Suppressors.
Do they help with your accuracy? I thought, you know, me being very heavy on the archery side, not knowing a ton on the rifle side, suppressors I thought were just kind of aiding in the suppression of the noise of the shot. It's actually helping out with accuracy?
Well, it reduces recoil pretty right. significantly, so that'll help with accuracy.
Okay.
But there are guns out there that, for whatever reason, they like being suppressed. I don't know what that is. I was going to say, my experience with suppressors in the military, I was that generation where they just started becoming a thing, or I guess they've been around forever, right?
Well, but, yeah, James Bond always used one.
Yeah, well, I want to get into that real quick, too, but we'll shelf that for a minute. Suppressors reduce the visual signature and the audible signature of a rifle, which is valuable for command and control on the battlefield, trying to maneuver troops under gunfire. They also, you know, allow you to stay undetected. If you fire a shot, you're not going to get that big muzzle flash. To me, it always seemed like a militaristic thing. It seemed like that was the world it existed in.
Yeah, didn't have a hunting component.
Yeah, well, now, as it turns out, they're becoming extremely popular. They always have been over in Europe. And in fact, a lot of countries in Europe mandate the use of a suppressor for combating noise pollution. I kid you not.
Oh, well, I guess so. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. Let's jump to the James Bond thing, right?
Yeah.
Here's the big misconception with suppressors. If you are firing a bullet that is supersonic, so faster than about 1,100 feet per second, you will still get the crack of that bullet breaking the sound barrier.
Right. That makes
sense.
So
you don't get that like pew, pew, pew that you see in the movies.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. When James Bond shoots somebody with the suppressor.
Right. It's still a pretty audible crack if you're firing faster than 1,100 feet per second. Where they're really cool is if you have a rifle that's firing a big, heavy, slow bullet. So think like .45 caliber pistol rounds, the 300 blackout.
Oh, okay.
You eliminate that crack because the bullet is traveling slower than 1,100 feet per second.
Yeah, so you don't have it. That's where you get the pew, pew, pew.
Well, all you get is the sound of the bolt or the slide or whatever racking back and forth.
Yeah, because I've shot my friends. He's got them on his rifles. And I've got to try it, and I was pretty impressed. I mean, didn't have to have ear protection.
Right.
And he's shooting his big 300 Win Mag, which usually has a pretty good thump to it. I was impressed. I mean, I was like, wow, that's super cool.
Yeah, recoil.
No recoil. It was a lot more fun to shoot.
Yeah, yeah.
So that made absolutely. It beneficial. But for hunting, though.
PSA to our listeners, there are 42 states where owning a suppressor is legal.
Right.
And 41 that allow hunting with a suppressor. And it's the usual culprits, California, Delaware, New Jersey, Illinois, etc., that have just outright banned them. For our listeners, a couple things to note. Make sure you check the regs wherever you're at that you can legally hunt with a suppressor.
Yeah.
And you do have to. It's an additional bit of paperwork. It's a federal stamp. You got to wait, which supposedly now is down to like 100-ish days.
My buddy just got another suppressor for a new gun he just purchased, and I think he had it within like 60, 70 days.
Okay.
I mean, it's kind of sped up. I know his first one, it was almost a year when he tried getting his first suppressor, all the paperwork he had to go through. And
waiting for the additional background check.
All that stuff. It was really kind of clogged up, the system was, but it sounds like it's getting pretty. You said 42 states allow
having
a suppressor.
Yeah, I know where you're going with
41 states allow you to hunt with them. What's the one state that says
can't
hunt?
I'll be honest, I don't know. I should have looked that up, but I don't know.
Interesting.
There is one state where you can own them, but you can't hunt. Yeah. So I'll make the argument. I think the banning of suppressors right off the bat, or the regulating of suppressors, I don't like the NFA, the National Firearms Act, passed in 1934. So that regulated machine guns, suppressors, short-barreled rifles, etc. I think it's a racist act. It essentially added an additional fee to the purchase and ownership of firearms. And the big push behind that was, I mean, you had the gang wars going on in Chicago and whatnot. Yeah. But essentially, it was one
like
more.
Like they cared.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Like it really.
Who it affected were poor Black Americans in the Southeast. It was a big Democrat push to essentially keep these guns out of the hands of former, you know, generations removed at that point. Well, some not, but slaves. And that's why I don't like the NFA, I think, was ridiculous to start with. But that's when, so since 1934, you've had to pay an additional fee to own a suppressor or a short-barreled rifle or whatever. So I don't like the fact that they were lumped into that group to begin with.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right.
And let's be honest. Look, if you're robbing a bank, it's that thing where you keep adding crimes to crimes.
Yeah.
If you're willing to go rob a bank and shoot people, do you care whether or not you have a legally owned suppressor?
Well, and that's the thing I always get back to when all of these regulations are proposed. They're trying to create these regulations and these laws for the people who don't give a rat's pahootie. I mean, most likely purchasing guns from the back of an El Camino in an alley.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't care. So it's just,
it's one additional
thing. It's just one additional thing. It affects the honest folks like us. You know, it's like, oh, okay, one more thing, one more hoop we have to jump through to maintain our weapons in our home. And so, I mean, it's not changing anything.
No, absolutely not. Not from a criminality standpoint.
No, not from, no, not at all. Nevada, we can use suppressors.
Correct.
Yep. Okay.
And you can you can own and hunt with them.
Yes.
If you guys have good recommendations for suppressors you've had success with, let us know. And then big thanks to Truck Envy for sponsoring the show. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. We're going to dive into some bucket biologist stuff. And if we get to it, maybe a little bit of Redding prep.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for joining us again. The show is Nevada Backcountry. We're going to dive into bucket biologists a little bit. First, big shout out to Hunting House Archery Center for sponsoring the show. Tim's got all the clothes in now. The shelves are stocked. He's got a ton of bows
man.
Over
you,
there.
Yeah, did you see the post he had when they were pulling all the bows off of the UPS truck?
No, was it never ending?
Dude, it was awesome. They showed some of the new bows, but I got to ask you real quick.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So last weekend we went out shooting.
Oh,
went
yeah.
Went out and did some long range shooting, getting all of our numbers in. And you couldn't stop talking about that Prime RVX.
Oh, yeah. I like that bow a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And for one, you were shooting awesome.
Hey, thanks, Dave.
Mean, just dropping X's at 70, 80, and 90 yards.
Well, I don't know if I picked up too many X's, but I will tell you, I was most proud
of
my...
Well, the X is really big at 100 yards.
That's true. I was really proud of my, like, 2-inch group at my first shots at 101, and they were just right on top of each other.
Yes.
But I will say, for people listening, man, if you're thinking about getting a new bow for the hunting season, I like those Prime bows. I thought it was marketing hype. So the grip is centered.
That center riser grip system.
You almost don't even have to stabilize them.
Right. Well, just watching you shoot too, your form is actually, and I wouldn't say better because you've always had good form, but your form is consistent. There's no fiddling. And that might be because the bow just sits so nice. Yeah.
It does.
But
well,
anyway.
You notice after, I'll tell you, and we will kind of go down a rabbit hole here, but I will tell you something. So I used to always let the bow fall forward.
Right.
You know, after the shot. That was back in the days where I didn't run a back bar or any of that nonsense. It is kind of a weird thing to get used to with that center grip because the bow just sits there. So you break the shot, and granted, that's how I have it stabilized and everything.
Yeah.
But it is almost kind of a weird feeling because it just sits. The bow doesn't rock forward. It doesn't rock back. It just stays dead still.
My bow is doing that as well, and just because of that exact reason that
you
said.
Well, you like them too.
Yeah, it was making me feel a little hinky. Like the bow, I shoot the Athens Axis 35.
Okay,
which also has that center riser grip format. when it would shoot and the bow would just sit dead still and upright without any, you know, movement, it kind of got me a little weak.
It does throw you off.
It threw
first.
Me off. Yeah. So I had to add a couple ounces to the nose just so that I could get that front
to fall forward.
Yeah, I took a few ounces off the back and added them to the front.
Right. See, I've gotten used to it now, yeah. And I like it. It did take some getting used to, but if you guys are looking for a new bow, in fact, I was talking to somebody at the shop there, but look, they're not a Hoyt, a Matthews, or whatever, but the Prime, should you owe it to yourself, go shoot one of the Prime bows Tim has over there. He got me going on them, and unfortunately for him, I don't think he's going to sell me any more bows for the foreseeable future because I like them.
Yeah, I'm interested now to go down and really give that RVX a run through.
It's a great bow.
I mean, I like the look of it for one, which is always
my
nice,
sparkly purple.
Well, you know, well, yeah, your 70s discotheque riser. But
Tim asked
anyway.
Me. Yeah, Tim asked me when I was getting it. Well, I went down, I shot Chandler's, and Tim said, "What color do you want it in?" And I was like, "I don't know. It's a target bow. I don't care what color it is." And he said, "Man, check out this." And I forget what it's called, but it is like an iridescent, sparkly deal.
It's like those little race cars you see around town every now and then. Yeah, you see one as it drives along. It like changes 30 different colors.
From purple to blue,
from blue
to green.
To green to, you know, and you're like, what in the world is that all about? That's your riser.
Yep. 100%. Yeah. So, hey, go down to Hunting House Archery Center. Check them out. Now,
now that we sidetracked, I know we're all excited.
Hey, bucket biologists, as they're referred to, Dave.
Yes, and more seem to be popping up.
Here's what brought this up. Somebody, two guys, I don't know if they've caught them yet. They have surveillance video, but two guys released 25
turkeys
into Key Pittman down south.
Key Pittman Wildlife Management Area. They figured they knew biology better than anyone else, so they went ahead and did that. And it really messes up the system. It really messes up the work, the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars that have gone into proper management of habitats, of species. It really just throws a wrench in the whole thing.
Well, it's usually out of self-interest. You know, some guy decides he likes catching and eating pike. Yeah. Some guy decides, hey, I want to hunt turkeys. But there is, like you were stating, there is that, we'll call it like the butterfly effect.
Yeah.
You can't introduce, turkey seems fairly innocuous on the surface. Hey, it's a big dumb bird, whatever.
Well, yeah, but how many species of them are there? What did they drop off? Were they tested? Do they have parasites? Do they have a disease? Is there something going on with them? You don't know any of this when you're dropping them into an environment. I mean, they may have had an invasive weed on their feathers, They could have had it in their feet. You know, you look at their underneath of just about any animal, and they're generally mud clumped, what have you. So, and then they transported them in some kind of a box that probably had straw or some type of materials in it. So you don't know the effects of what they've done. And we may not know for a couple of years.
It'll take a while, yeah.
You know, if we start seeing some weird invasive plant or weed or something coming up, how did that get there?
Well, I was going to bring up, we raised turkeys one year at my house and to slaughter.
They're mean, dude.
They're mean, they're messy, and we didn't know what we were getting into. We've got tons of chickens. We thought, okay, it's just a bigger version of a chicken. I think I forget how many we started with, but we wound up with two that actually lived. They all got bumblefoot, which is a gnarly, warty growth thing on their feet.
Right.
So we had to axe some of them early because of that. But you don't know what kind of diseases these things have.
No.
I would point to like the domestic sheep, wild sheep thing
with
the pneumonia, where domestic sheep, you'd never know
that they have it.
Yeah.
Because they don't show symptoms of it.
But it's absolutely detrimental to a native population of animals.
Exactly.
Same thing with these turkeys. Like you said, we don't know what they had.
Well, we don't know where they came from. Are they Merriam's? Are they, are they Rio Grande's? I mean, are we going to have an issue there? There's a lot of factors that come into play there that most don't really look at. You know, they say, they dropped off 25 turkeys. Big deal. Either coyotes will kill them or, whatever. Not a big deal. It's an enormous deal. They will be caught. I mean, you see their truck, a white Chevy pickup truck, towing a white horse trailer. The video, the footage has partial license plates. It's just a matter of time before they are caught. I mean,
was it a Nevada license plate?
That I don't know.
Okay.
That I don't know.
What about as far as mitigation with the birds themselves? Have they caught them? Have they killed them? What's the plan there? Do you know?
I don't know what the plan is. I would figure the best course of action is to remove those from the management area, not to just say, well, they're there, so let's just leave them. I think the best course of action would be to remove them. And in doing so, sometimes you end up removing existing
wild
ones
turkeys
that are there,
or whatever.
You don't know what they were. Right. You know what I'm saying? So in the long run, it could actually have a very negative effect on your hunting opportunities at that management area, because you might have to take all of them out of there just to get ahead of any potential issue, any potential disease, parasite, you know, what have you, anything.
Part of that too is that it's just such a weird, I don't know what possesses people to do this kind of stuff. You know, I'm sure they thought, hey, we're putting more, there's already turkeys here, we're going to put more turkeys here.
Yeah, so they'll have more tags next year because they'll count more birds.
Yeah, all 25 of them.
That's not how it works. I mean, if you've got that kind of a harebrained scheme going on in your head, I'm going to raise 1,000 chucker and I'm going to release them in a place that doesn't have them or a place that I want to hunt that's near my house. Just get involved with the Chucker Foundation. Just help them out. Just if you feel like you need to do something, find the correct way of doing it.
And if you're listening right now and you're one of those people that thinks like, hey, man, I'm going to take this stuff out and release it, just don't do it.
Yeah. And if anyone does know anything about what happened down there, please contact the Department of Wildlife, the Law Enforcement Division, and so they can track down these
knuckleheads.
Yeah. These people and take care of the situation.
So, hey, that's Bucket Biologist. Coming up, we start to veer into it a little bit, but we'll get into redding prep.
Yeah.
It's the National Outdoor...
Yes, the NFAA National Outdoor
Championship.
Yeah, so I have all the pros there.
Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, thanks for hanging around over the break. Hopefully you got a refill on the coffee. You're listening to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. We just wrapped up on Bucket Biologists. Both of us are going to be shooting the Redding Shoot Western Trail Classic.
Yeah, it's the NFAA National Outdoor Championships. Yeah.
Right. We're shooting that not this weekend, but next weekend.
Yep.
I wanted to go into a little bit of Redding prep. First off, what are you shooting bow-wise, sight-wise? Go through your setup for people listening.
I'm shooting the Athens Axis 35, which is a 35 axle-to-axle bow. It is set at 70 or 60 pounds with a 70% let-off.
I was about to say 70 pounds, Dave?
No, 60 for outdoor. I am shooting my Excel scope with a 6-power lens on it, which you can use for competition shooting. You can use magnified lenses.
Right.
Cannot use them for hunting, just so folks know. And I've got my, you know, my front 30-inch stabilizer and my back 17-inch stabilizer. So
it's Easton, right?
It's Easton, yes.
Okay.
It's the Eastons. It's not something you'd hunt with. It's kind of like people who set up, like precision rifles that go out and they're like shooting 2,000 yards, and it's not a gun you're going to go carry in the mountains and hunt.
Oh, no.
This is a bow that you're not going to go carry around and hunt with.
Very similar to precision rifle in the weight thing.
Oh, exactly.
They're heavy. I think I'm running a pound, so 16 ounces of weight on my back bar. So there's 1 pound hanging off the back of my bow.
Yeah.
These are a different animal altogether.
Completely. I mean, and you know, a lot of folks have that saying, is like, well, you're not shooting your hunting bow, so it's not making you any better. Well, it is.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It is. Absolutely. Because my hunting bow is also an Axis 35, but it's set up for hunting.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, my draw is the same, my set's my same, everything is the same. So it's just same bow.
Slightly different.
The stabilizer's different and sight's different and things like that. But with my hunting bow, I still whack something at 85 yards.
Much like the precision rifle world, You know, just because you enjoy going out and ringing steel out to 1,200 yards or something doesn't mean that's a shot you're going to take hunting.
Yeah.
But I would argue that if you can make that shot at 1,200 yards, chances are 400 and in, you're going to be golden.
Right.
Like you said, the transition then to a hunting setup, I'm much more accurate just because I have so many thousands of hours
and
shooting
arrows.
A bow.
How many arrows, you know, the 50,000, 60,000 arrows you
exactly.
shoot in a year. And in competition, it's very different than a hunting situation where, you know, you're hunting an animal and you're trying to hit a target about the size of a, you know, like a 14-inch hubcap.
Right.
Right? That's like the chest.
Yeah.
Okay? Competition at 60 yards, we're aiming at something that has the, you know, the like if you turned a soda can, the diameter
right,
of a
right.
soda can, and that's what we're hitting at 60 yards. I mean,
well,
so,
trying to.
Well,
in my case.
No, you do. You do. So, I mean, that's the difference, and that's why you've got, you know, you have a couple extra components to the bow.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
But they also have divisions where they have a hunting, you know, the bow hunter division. They have a recurve division, which I shot a couple years back with my Olympic recurve, which was a lot of fun at 101 yards.
That's a perfect example, the famous Bigfoot target at Redding. It's 101 yards. It's like an 8-inch circle you're trying to hit.
Yeah, 20 centimeters.
I'm never going to take...
7.76.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, 7.76.
Okay. I'm never going to try to take a 101-yard shot bow hunting. But if I can consistently hit a 7 3/4-inch circle at 101 yards with a bow, I feel much more confident about that 43-yard shot.
Oh, yeah. Depending on the animal, like when I draw one of the Nevada moose tags.
Yeah, you and me both,
Dave.
You
know, when I draw that tag, depending on conditions, I would not hesitate taking an 80-yarder.
That's definitely within the
big animal.
I'll point out an example. You know, Tim Gillingham, he's a, you know, one of the best in the world when it comes to this stuff. But he talks about that a lot. And it's kind of all that what your frame of reference is. So for him, a 100-yard shot is like a chip shot because he's done it for so long.
Yeah.
He knows, you know, if the wind's blowing like this, I got to do this, whatever. But yeah, for your average guy that dusts off the bow a month before hunting season,
yeah,
100 yards seems outside the realm of possibility. But just because it's outside the realm of possibility for that guy,
no,
doesn't mean it's outside the realm of possibility. And it's still an ethical shot for somebody like a Tim Gillingham.
Correct.
What shots have you scared at Redding?
The only animal that I have not 22'd is Bigfoot.
That's the only one.
That's the only one. I have 21 that shot, that 101-yard shot. I've 21 the daylights out of him for 10 years, 15 years. Literally the only one. I went back because I still have all my scorecards and stuff. I have a little
right.
file. I keep all that stuff in because it's just cool. And yeah, that's one target in all of Redding that I have not 22'd. And a 22 is the best you can do. It's hitting the center with both your arrows.
So the orange
two shots
dot,
on each animal.
Yeah, the orange dot is worth 11 points.
Yes.
And you shoot two arrows at it.
At each animal. Correct.
So you've shot an 11 and a 10 just slightly outside.
Correct. Every time.
What gets you? Wind or?
I don't know. I don't know. I couldn't tell you, man. It's like my cow elk. It's a nemesis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I know the house we stayed in last year with the guys, they found a Bigfoot sticker for you.
Yeah, we're
just to rub it in a little bit.
A little bit. They do something like that every year. But yeah, it's a sticker with Bigfoot flipping me off and it says 22 this.
Yeah.
So it's my favorite sticker.
So Bigfoot, this is going to be the year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to be the year. Yeah, this is definitely going to be
you,
the year.
When we went out and we did prep, we were shooting in our marks, as it's called.
Yeah.
But basically verifying, okay, if my little program archer's mark says that I should be at whatever, 85.1, okay, go out and actually shoot that and say, you know, you figure out whether or not, okay, is it 85.1 like the software says, or is it 85.3?
Right.
It's called shooting in your marks. And we did that. You hit a silver dollar at 101 yards with one of your shots.
Yeah.
So this is the year.
It's the year.
Yeah.
You just have to do it twice now.
What other ones kind of have given you fits over the years? Is it the longer stuff, the shorter stuff?
You know, man, like my favorite shot everyone loves Bigfoot, but I love the standing bears across the canyon.
And that's the one you said wind gets people.
Yeah, because you're shooting from one canyon across it into onto the face of the other canyon.
And pretty downhill, too.
Yeah, and it's pretty downhill, and there seems to always be a breeze. So that is one where it's very technical. You got to kind of get your binoculars and see what the wind's doing down at the target and kind of give yourself a little bit of gauging from that. But that's my favorite one. That's your shot. I love that shot. Other than that, you know, I don't really have any that just really
stand out one way or the other.
Stand out one way or another and just really give me an itch.
Okay.
I mean, I love them all. I love the elk scene, the 88-yard elk scene where everyone's watching because it's in front of the main area where all the vendors are and everyone's having lunch and everything like that. So you're kind of like on a stage when you're shooting it with your group on the elk scene. You got 100, 200 people sitting there watching your shot.
The professional camera crew is there, the whole nine.
Everybody's got their binoculars on through the shot, and it does get some people because they get nervous because they have so many people watching the target as you're shooting, but I could care less.
Yeah, hey, too cool for school.
It's like you're
Danger Dave.
Yeah, in a day, no one's going to give a rat's pahootie what Dave shot, so I just shoot.
But I got a good story about the elk scene, but I'm looking at the clock here, so let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, I learned a lesson the hard way on the elk scene last year.
Oh.
I'll talk about that, and we'll talk a little bit about the mental side of...
Yeah, and the weather.
Oh, the weather. That's right.
Yeah.
We'll get to all that coming up on Nevada Backcountry, 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry here. Where we left off, we were just starting to get into Redding stuff. Redding is coming up, so we'll be over there for that. And I said I had a good story, or I guess I'll call it a cautionary tale about Redding and the elk scene.
Yes.
So you and I have talked about this before. Last year when I shot it, this goes towards kind of trusting your instincts, trusting your gut, believing in your marks and your setup and everything. We get to the elk scene, and like you said last segment, everybody's watching, the camera crew's out there. So I step up, and I'm first up to the shooting line. I send one downrange. Probably the cleanest release I've had all day. Shot felt great. Like minimal pin float. I was like, man, I drilled that thing.
You just felt like you nailed it.
Yeah. Knew. Like, okay. So the guy, and I'm not going to name him, but the guy in the group I was shooting with, he's looking through binos, and he goes way, way low and right. And I'm going way, way, way low and right. So I do the thing. I'm like, all right, I look at my cheat sheet with my marks. I look at my scope. Yeah, everything's good. Everything's set right. Felt perfect. So I'm like, well, hang on. Let me see. I look at the target down there. And he's kind of talking me in on where he thought my arrow was. And I see something like a mark on the target. Yeah. And I think, well, those are my flat. You know, at 88 yards, it's hard to see.
I mean, a 1.5-inch
little
fletching. That's a low profile. Yeah.
So I'm looking. I'm like, oh, man, he's absolutely right. Well, the shot felt really clean. So I thought, okay, I'm going to start clicking. So I go clicking away on my scope. And I step back up there. I send the shot. It hits like way high above behind the elk. And I see the splash of dirt. And I go, okay, something went way, way wrong.
Yeah.
So we're both looking through. There's not another arrow in it. Okay, fair enough. Everybody else in the group shoots. We walk down there. My first arrow is center punched in the orange dot about as perfectly as you could shoot it. There was a chunk of foam missing out of the target. And that's what we saw.
And that's what he thought was your arrow.
That's what he thought was my arrow.
Yeah.
So in his defense, I'll give him credit. It wasn't like he was trying to mess with me or play head games. I think he genuinely, and so did I when I looked at it, he genuinely thought that chunk out of the target was my arrow. So, you know, how many times do you hear at these shoots we go to, Dave, trust your marks.
Yes.
Execute your shot.
Yep.
that was a big lesson I learned last year. If everything's set correctly and the shot feels good, don't start. Leave it alone. Send a second arrow.
Send a second arrow.
That's my elk scene story. I'm hoping this year I don't have a miss.
You won't.
Yeah.
No misses.
No misses.
No misses. Nope. It's a fun shoot. If anyone out there has been or is wanting to try 3D shooting, Redding is one of those shoots that if you're on the West Coast, just need to get to.
The whole thing, the experience is worth the trip.
It's one of the largest, if not the largest, 3D NFAA 3D national championship on the West Coast.
Yeah.
There's vendors, there's almost 2,000 shooters, and it is just an absolute blast.
It's only my second year, but yeah, I don't plan on missing it. Not just the shooting part, but that first morning was so cool. I had parked, I was walking up to my target. They do the national anthem. So I was kind of standing on the hill up. It was that foggy morning. They're playing the national anthem. Yeah. Thousands of people standing around down by the elk scene.
Yeah.
And I was kind of looking around like, man, this is cool. This is a cool shoot. We talked last segment a little bit about your favorite targets or favorite stations and then stations that kind of give you fits every time.
Yeah.
Let's talk about goals for this year for you. You said 22 Bigfoot.
I have the 22 Bigfoot. And then obviously every year I want to beat my top score.
Which was?
My top score right now is 15.09.
What year did you shoot that?
2-3 years ago?
Smoke's starting to come out of your ears.
Yeah, I'm like, spinning the tires.
Couple years ago?
Yeah.
Bigfoot, you dropped one there.
Yeah, I dropped one there. I went on a 21 streak up the canyon, which kind of really sucked.
You hate when they're in a row like that.
Oh, man, and it's just like the first shot's just money, and then the second shot's just out, and you're like, come on.
What did I do?
Yeah, exactly. What's going on? That's going to be my goal.
Okay.
Any shoot I go to, it's like, I just want to beat my best score that I've shot at this particular event.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not too big on, if I hit the podium, it's awesome. I love the podium. It's not paying my mortgage. I just go out there and have fun with it. But that and then 22 in Bigfoot, it looks like this year is going to be some really fantastic weather because there's always a variation. I mean, you get winds, you get...
Rained on us all last year. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's always something.
I could see how Redding would be a good benchmark for like, hey, I want to beat my score last year because the layout never changes.
No, the layout, just the weather changes.
That's the weather,
the
right.
The weather's a big factor.
But I'm thinking about like some of these, like the Winnemucca shoot, the Fallon indoor shoot.
Yeah.
They always change the layout a little bit.
Correct.
It's slightly different. So it's hard to gauge year to year like, right. Oh, did I beat my score last year? Well, it's different targets.
Yeah, different targets.
Versus Redding, where the only variable really is, like you said, the weather.
That's it. Yeah, all the targets have always been the same. Well, when we had the fire, or when Redding had the fire, burnt down a couple of the targets, but so they had to redo the range.
Okay.
The old record that stood at Redding will never be broken now because the course. So, Jesse Broadwater, congratulations. You have the all-time and never-to-be-beaten.
1530 is perfect, right?
1540 is perfect.
Oh, 1540, okay.
Yeah, he shot a 1539.
Whoa.
He dropped one, and that was on the Saturday when it was windy. He dropped 1 point on a windy day.
You know, I got to shoot behind him, and for those that don't know, Jesse Broadwater has won everything you can win. Yeah, just
pro shooter for Hoyt. He's probably one of the best archers out there right now. Him, Levi Morgan. Levi Morgan's amazing at ASA.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't see Levi Morgan last year or see his name.
No, he wasn't at Redding last year. I think he's on the list for this year, though.
Okay, so I shot behind, or I guess two groups behind Jesse Broadwater's group last year, and I got to watch him shoot at some of the stations.
Yeah.
So I know the secret to shooting perfectly now.
Yeah.
But I think I've told you before, it's weird. It's like watching a professional golfer. Every single station, he went through the same routine, and every single shot looked exactly the same. Didn't matter if it was an uphill, downhill, whatever.
Yeah, he's a robot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of them like that. I mean, you got Paige Pierce, you got Jesse, all of them. They're just...
I would be willing to bet if you forced him to stand at every station on like a tape measure, his feet would be the same distance apart every single time to within a millimeter.
Yeah, you can almost time it. When he clicks into his loop, if you started the stopwatch then until he drew, followed through, and shot until the release, you wouldn't be more than a second or two off at any given time. His process is just money. There's a contingent out there that's like, oh, I don't do competition shooting. I don't do that 3D stuff, and I don't shoot paper targets. I'm a hunter.
That was me until a couple years ago.
You know, I'm a hunter. I know what I need to do.
Yeah.
It's the practice. It's like golfing. It's like bowling. It's like the repetition. It's the practice, gymnastics, you know, whatever it is.
What do they say? It's like 10,000 hours it takes to master something,
yeah,
a skill.
Something like that, yeah.
So, I mean, that's the way I look at it, is just putting in the time, but it has cleaned up for sure. It's cleaned up my shooting. And unfortunately, Redding is one of those events that sells out. So if you're listening and you're thinking, hey, I'm going to go do this next weekend,
yeah, it's
sold out.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to be on top of it. It's almost like a Taylor Swift concert. If you're not there and buying...
I knew you were a Taylor Swift fan. I knew
it. I'm a Swiftie. Yeah, not going to be.
For those of you listening, if you got any interest in 3D shooting, target archery stuff...
There's a lot of local shoots. You got the cancer shoot in Carson City this weekend, which is happening today. Then you have the Fallon, the River Madness shoot, which is May 18th and 19th. That's a lot of fun. There's still the Winnemucca, going to be having an outdoor shoot here coming up. You got the SAB shoot on Memorial Day weekend. So there's a lot of local chances to get
Absolutely,
out.
Yeah.
Get out and test your skills and... You know, get out there. Don't worry about everybody else. Just get out there and shoot for yourself.
So, hey, get out, shoot your bow this summer, especially with all the additional archery tags that are going to be available this year. Thank you for tuning into the show today. Dave and I both really appreciate all the feedback we get, all the questions, all the comments, both pros and cons. It makes us better at our job. Tom Gresham is coming up next on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.